Greg Berg. Let's check WGTD sports and weather. Major League Baseball: Brewers shut out by Pittsburgh 9-0. Cubs lost to the Cardinals 4-3 in 14. White Sox lost to Minnesota 5-3. Tonight, the Brewers and White Sox are off. The Cubs host Miami. NBA playoffs. Yesterday's winners were Golden State and Miami. Now that WGTD Monday forecast from the National Weather Service. Sunny and mild today. We're heading for an afternoon high of 73 degrees inland, 66 near Lake Michigan. New numbers just in, wind from the east-northeast at 4 miles per hour. 52 degrees Racine, 53 in Kenosha. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 8:11, the morning show with Greg Berg next.
Support for WGTD comes from Jack Andrea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, newly reimagined for 2018, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back, jackandrea.com. Support also comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses designed for the working adult. More information at carthage.edu/grad. And we welcome you to the Monday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Last week, southeastern Wisconsin lost a legend, theater organ aficionado Fred Hermes, who transformed the basement of his Racine home into an amazing home theater, complete with a Wurlitzer theater organ at its heart. And Fred Hermes took great pleasure in inviting guests into his home from time to time to experience the splendor of that theater and that theater organ. I had one opportunity to enter the home of Fred Hermes, and that was to record a program of the morning show. So out of the archives, here is that program again with fondest memories of and tribute to Fred Hermes. the majestic and wonderful sounds of the mighty Wurlitzer Theater Organ, which is in the home of Fred Hermes. And this is a place I have heard a lot about for many, many years. But now at long last, I'm in this incredible room and bringing it to you, listening on to the morning show today. Fred Hermes has welcomed me into his home. And we are joined also by a fine theater organist by the name of Dean Roscoe, who's going to be the featured soloist in an event coming up at the Racine Theater Guild on the 30th of March. So we're going to be talking about that. And my thanks to Carthage student John Habermas, who helped engineer this gathering. He's known Fred for many, many years and has told me a lot about that, but it has not prepared me for what a magical place this is. Fred Hermes has, in effect, transformed the bottom level of his home on the north side of Racine into an old-style movie palace complete with this magnificent theater organ. And we're going to talk with him for a few minutes about how he became so interested in this wonderful world and what it took to create this incredible space. And we'll also talk with Dean Roscoe about his career playing theater organ. So Fred Hermes and Dean Roscoe and John Habermas, a warm welcome to all three of you to the morning show. Glad you can be here. Fred, come on over and let's get a little bit of a history lesson. First of all, is this a lifelong interest in theater organ? And surely something got it going in the first place.
I would say it's a lifelong interest, minus the first three years. I got interested in the organ, and this is what I tell these tour groups, because I get a lot of tour groups here. Mm-hmm. I got interested in the organ. I was, of course, taking piano lessons. I went to this one church, and we had this one organist who sat up in front. You could see her, the backside of her. Be careful what they say. And she'd go back and forth on the bench, like a pendulum waving. And it was an old tracker organ, and of course, everybody could see her, and people would smile when she'd do this. So I thought, gee, that's interesting. So I went up and talked to her, and she says, yeah, go ahead and try the organ if you want. So I looked inside, had all these mechanical levers and everything going. I clunk out a couple tunes, and I decided to have an organ. I think 8 years old or so. Mm. So there was an old lady that lived down the hill from where we did, and she had an old pump organ, old pump reed organ, sitting on the porch. And every day when I went to school, I walked by there. So I asked her, what do you want? You want to sell that thing? She says, yeah. She says, give me $2 for it and it's yours. So I went home and found $2 and round up about a half a dozen or more other kids my age, pull my coaster wagon down there. We picked it up, put it on there, hauled it back home. When my mother got home from shopping downtown, there it was sitting in front of the fireplace.
Surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise. Well, fortunately, she liked to sing, and I could play and accompany her, so we actually developed a relationship at that point in time.
Very good. Do you still have that old pipe organ or pump organ, or what happened to it?
No, it disappeared. I put a blower on it, and it broke it up for parts like too many other organs.
So over the years, how many different organs have you owned ahead of this mighty Wurlitzer that is right behind us?
I'm going to guess about 10, because a couple more pump organs. But
so you own organs the way some people own pickup trucks, and you work on them and refurbish them.
And get rid of them, yeah. The first pipe organ I bought was a Wurlitzer, 2.7 Wurlitzer that I bought from the Rialto Theater in Racine. I bought that in 1947. I'm sorry, 46, before I was married. And the solar chamber, of course, was water-soaked, so I had to throw that out, leak in the roof. So I was taking it apart, and all the screws were rusting, and something fell on my head off of the xylophone, a piece of wood, and scratched me right across there. Well, my fiancée, my future wife, when I went to her house that weekend, because they lived on a farm, she says, "What's that?" I said, "An organ bug bit me." She actually believed it. And so I bought this thing, put it together, but like I say, the solo organ was ruined. So I went to Milwaukee and bought a 2.5 Wurlitzer and used that as a solo organ. And that, of course, was in mint condition. And even had a single-phase blower on it. So, and a better console, too, by the way. I combined both consoles. And that's where that started. Well, of course, it wasn't big enough. All guys always want something bigger. You know how that goes.
Again, it sounds like pickup trucks a little bit.
That's right. So, Bill Liggett out of Browns Lake had a ballroom dance hall out there, and he wanted to buy this organ. I said, that's fine, because I had found another organ in a church up in Madison, Wisconsin, which was advertised Wurlitzer organ for sale, $2,000. Didn't say what it was or anything, but I thought it was worth looking at. And it had come from the Strand Theater in Madison. It was a four-manual, 11 ranks. That's four keyboards, 11 ranks. The smallest four-manual organ that Wurlitzer ever built, and the most unusual specification. I don't want to go into all the details on that, but you know what I'm talking about. So I looked at that thing, and I said, I'll give you a, I wanted to give him 500. My wife said, no, you can't give me. Well, give him 300. So I offered him 300, and he said, well, if we want, we'll, if we're interested, we'll call you. Well, I got back home to Racine. The phone was ringing, come and get it. Well, they're tearing the building down. They had no alternative. Would have gone into dump otherwise. So myself and another one of our members, Tom Wrench, who's presently in there, retired from the organ business, he went up there over the weekend, the 4th of July. We took it apart and hauled it back here in two big trucks, not here, but in my in the garage over there, and then put it together in the basement of our office building. And we played that for a long time. But, of course, it wasn't big enough. It only had 11 ranks and only four manuals.
Only.
So I had a, I wanted something bigger, so I went through Wurlitzer's installation list, of which I have, and I looked at all that they had and boiled it down. They had a five-manual Wurlitzer, three five-manuals they built, and this was the biggest of the three, and this was in the Michigan Theater in Detroit. So I went over to look at it. Another friend of mine said the organ was unbuyable. Well, that doesn't stop me. So I went over there, and the thing had run down to the bottom of the orchestra pit. They cut a hole in the concrete face of the stage, shoved it through onto a platform, and cemented the hole back up. Poured concrete.
So there it was stuck.
It was there it was, and then they took the lift apart and disconnected the blower. So it was unplayable. So I talked to the guy there, and the owner, the building representative of the owner, and well, okay, maybe we'll sell it. Give us an offer. I offered him $1,000. Well, that wasn't enough. They wanted $5,000. So we negotiated at $3,000. So I bought it for $3,000, and that's what I sold the four manual for, so it didn't cost me anything anyway. Except $1,500 to truck it here. And then I got that here, took 2 years to recondition it, set it up down here. This place was nothing but a big area.
It was just like an empty room, basically.
Empty room, and it was like for a recreation room. My kids had the ping pong table, they had basketball hoops, and there wasn't a back wall or anything, just four walls.
And a theater organ. And ping pong tables and a theater organ.
Yeah, that's right. So what happened is the kids grew up, out went all their junk. What am I going to do with this space? And the organ has a cable about 100 feet long, 3 inches thick, 3,000 wire, and this sat over in the corner. So I figured, why not fix it up like a theater? Because at that point in time, they were starting to tear down all these beautiful movie palaces around the country. So I went and called these wreckers and, you know, nosed around, and they found out I was interested in this sort of thing. So they'd call me up and say, we're tearing this theater down. Come and get what you want before we haul it to the dump. It was less junk for them to haul to the dump. Yeah. So that's where all this stuff came from.
Wow. Just a rough guess, how many different theaters are we talking about that are represented with various artifacts in
I'd
this
say
room?
About 50.
50 different movie theaters.
Different ones.
Movie palaces.
The biggest one, of course, is the Venetian Theater in Racine, which is represented by all this ornamental plaster. That's all out of the Venetian.
In downtown Racine.
Yes. Terrible thing. I don't want to go into that story.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say, it probably makes you sad if you ever go to movies now to be sitting in a sleek, modern space that is nothing like what the movie experience used to be.
Yeah, like Ben Hall said, there's the new modern theater's got a air conditioning and a popcorn machine, and that's it.
Let's talk about this five-manual Wurlitzer that is right behind us. Maybe first of all, although I think in some ways this is a fairly obvious, simple question, but what are the most significant ways in which a so-called theater organ differs from the typical organ that one finds in a good-sized church?
There's a big difference. A theater organ was designed for accompanying silent films, period. And the bigger they got, the more ranks they got, the more sets of pipes they had in, like diapasons and certain kinds of flutes in it that a church organ would have. So when you got to be about 30 ranks, if it was a good theater organ, you could play classical music on it as well as theater music.
Mm.
But the basic thing about a theater organ, it's got a tibia clausa in it, which is a big, lovely-sounding hollow flute. It really is lush.
Mm.
And I have one in the organ where I used to play in church. It was a Barton organ, by the way, and there was a tibia in that. So when we get a lousy sermon, I play that tibia and maybe get people still to put money in the plate.
That was the way you...
But you don't find those in church organs.
Now, what, of course, we were hearing as you played Begin the Begin was all kinds of percussion effects that you obviously don't have on a typical church organ. First of all, how are you playing that? How are you making the cymbals and different things play in time?
Well, they have the actual instruments in the organ. It's not synthetic. Some of the stuff is over there.
So it's an actual cymbal that's being
right.
played.
And an action which actually causes it to strike and hit.
And
that's controlled by the keys or the pedals or what second touch or whatever.
Mm. So you can control that in a couple of different ways then?
Oh, yeah.
So what are those effects that you have? I mean, I know we heard cymbals and other percussion instruments, too.
Well, you want a long list? There's two xylophones in the organ. There's a glockenspiel. There's chimes. There's a harp. There's tune bells. There's drums. There's a bird whistle. There's a boat whistle. There's a siren, a triangle, all the stuff you'd find in an orchestra, plus a lot of effects, automobile horn, plus thunder effects, plus all the effects you need to play for a silent film.
Wow.
Because that's what they were used for.
Sure, and you're in a sense providing the whole film score that nowadays we get from an orchestra.
Exactly right.
Were all these effects already in this organ, or did you add some of those yourself?
The only thing I added, and I'll play them for you too, and I just got them playing. I've had these bells here for 40 years and never hooked them up. About 2 months ago, I finally got around to it. And they're Barton tune doorbells, saucer bells.
And you're going to demonstrate them for us?
Ah, sure.
Very good. Please do. And let me, you're going to do it right now?
You want me to hear them?
Sure. Go ahead. And as you make your way, I'm going to reintroduce you. This is the great Fred Hermes, a legend here in Racine. And we are speaking from the basement of his home on the north side of Racine. And in the room, which is, in effect, a small movie palace in his home. And this five-manual Wurlitzer theater organ is the centerpiece. And he's about to demonstrate the bells purchased 40 years ago that are at last hooked up and ready to play. Pretty effect putting the harp with it. Wonderful. I have to say, too, one of the most interesting things as we listen to Begin the Begin is back behind this ornamental screen behind the organ is where you heard the sound of the cymbals playing, for instance, and you would absolutely swear there's somebody back there doing it, but of course it's through the wonders of this mighty Wurlitzer. So,
another thing about the organ, I can seat about 100, and I guess if I pack them in, about 170 people in here, including the balcony, because this basement is about 20 feet deep. But the organ itself takes as much room as this rest of this does.
The organ? You mean it's the
pipe work and everything else? There are about, roughly speaking, close to 3,000 pipes in here.
Wow. Which we don't really see.
No, they're all behind grills.
Hmm.
The house is built in the shape of a T. Unlike Tom, this wing goes back in about 15 feet. That goes back beyond the wall another 15 feet. And back behind that grill, it goes back about maybe 14 or 15 feet. And all that stuff is in there.
Now, when did your sons graduate and the ping pong tables go out and you began work on recreating a movie palace? How long ago was that?
I would say that would have been, roughly speaking, 1970.
Wow.
Roughly speaking.
Wow.
They tore down the Venetian Theater in 1978, and that's when I was able to obtain all this ornamental plaster.
Hmm. It must be kind of a strange mix of emotions for you, in that what makes this possible is, of course, the demise of something which you loved so much, and yet
That's true.
Is your way of paying tribute to that great tradition.
Right.
One of the things we noticed is that, we're getting one of the swell pedals closed up.
Sound like Niagara Falls.
Yeah, right. Yeah, now it's a little quieter in the background.
Well, that's the wind and surf effect we have in here, which you play when you're playing ebb tide.
Oh, there you go. Now, one thing I wanted to ask you about is the mechanism by which the organ goes up and down. I mean, right now it's raised up to full height, and we see everything, including the pedals, but it can descend down into the earth a bit as well.
The organ console goes down to where the top is even with this
rail,
orchestra rail.
Yeah.
And it goes up, so the platform is all the way a little up to the top of here, too.
Mm-hmm.
Complete. And the reason for that is that when you were playing for silent films, you didn't want to see the console. You didn't want to see the organist.
Mm.
All you're interested in was seeing the film, and the background music was just something to fill in properly, if done properly, and you really weren't even supposed to notice the music.
Mm.
Then, of course, when you played solos, organ came up out of the pit. And
that might happen before the film or after the film?
Or could before, anywhere in between.
Right. Very good.
I had a friend of mine, John Murray, who used to play silent films back in the 20s. And he told me many times, he said, a lot of different things about what he'd do and so forth. And I had a bunch of kids here one time. One of the kids says to John, he said, "No, I got an old grandpa." And I don't know if you want to cut this out or not. But anyway, I had an old grandpa because he played for kids' programs too. And he said, "You know, he has to go to the bathroom every 15, 20 minutes at night. His room's next to mine." He said, "Now, some of you guys are getting old now." And I said, "We studied silent films, and I know that some of them last 3 hours. Birth of a Nation, Phantom of the Opera was 2.
Mm.
Intolerance, I think, was 3.5, almost 4 hours. What did you guys do when you had a, you know?"
Okay.
He said, "Well, that was easy. Remember, you're playing the organ, you're out of sight. They can't see you. And a lot of these guys had a tin bucket at the bottom of the pit. And there wasn't a one of them that wasn't worth a grain of salt who could play with 2 feet in one hand and nobody know the difference." And Pearl White, now she was a female organist. She was here at the same time. And they said, "Well, Pearl, what did you girls do then?" She says, "That's no problem. We just stuck a pencil in the key and say we got to go fix the organ."
Oh, my.
So it's all kinds of angles.
You get the job done.
And we got over here a Howard seat over there, too.
Oh, yeah, a special seat that the organist could sit on.
And now there's a disadvantage of that, too. Now you might want to edit this.
Yeah, that's right, right. go ahead.
But that was designed by an outfit called Howard, I think it was Howard Instrument Company or something like that. And the engineer, like many engineers, they always carry everything to the nth degree, beyond proper common sense, you know what I'm talking about. So one half went this way and one half went that way. They're split in the middle.
Of this cushioned bench.
One over there. And that was fine because that's the way your legs move. One the other, you know, like that all the time. And that worked fine, but there was a strong spring that pulled the halves back together. And if you raise one leg too far and the thing snapped back,
Whoa. You
could have a lot of problems.
Yeah.
And it didn't affect the female organ, so.
Right. Okay.
You can delete that.
We know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I just want to get that in there.
I'm sure you did. Well, we probably should hear some music now, I think. And we should call on our soloist, Dean Roscoe. First of all, Dean, if you don't mind my asking, how old are you?
I'll be 24 on Friday, actually.
24 years old. So, I mean, we're not surprised when people of John's generation and Fred's generation have this deep love for old movie palaces and old theater organs, but it's a little more uncommon for somebody in their mid-20s to be bitten by the same sort of passion. How did this happen for you?
I was always interested in the piano. We had a piano in the house, and I started playing the accordion because it was a different sound, and I started accordion lessons, and I took from Frank Riccio, actually, here in Racine, so he's kind of a name some of you might recognize, but I realized that, you know, hey, with the organ, you have a lot of different sounds at once, so with the possibility to combine all sorts of different sounds into one great, big, beautiful one.
Yeah.
So a couple of trips up to the Organ Piper in Greenfield, where I'm currently on staff as one of the organists there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Organ Piper in Greenfield, and a Walt Stroni concert, actually, at the Riverside Theater up in Milwaukee, which the Dairyland Theater Organ Society owns the organ in the Riverside, and to Chicago Stadium. It was a privilege to be able to attend the last hockey game ever played in that wonderful old building with the largest theater organ in the world, and hearing that live was it.
Wow. that made you a believer.
Well, that was an experience just about emotional enough to change anybody, I think.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just hearing that in that room and that building, mm-hmm. really, really incredible. So that's kind of where I got my interest in the theater organ from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So tell us what this organ looks like to you. I imagine you've played it before.
Yeah, on a few occasions.
Yeah.
Been down to
now,
a few
now
times,
how does
yeah.
this how does this compare, you know, in terms of the whole universe of theater organs?
I mean,
is this one of the biggest, one of the most amazing?
This is on the bigger side of things. Yeah, I think before we started, we were just chatting briefly here, John. Habermas and I both own our own Wurlitzer organ on the smaller end of things, and they built a ton. I mean, they built a ton of the Style D, like John has, and fewer than the one I have, but it was the later incarnation of the Style D. But as far as this goes, this was the biggest of three five manual Wurlitzer organs that the firm built originally back in the 20s.
Hmm. And for our listeners who don't know the term, a manual on an organ is essentially a separate keyboard. So when you look at this Wurlitzer, you're seeing five separate keyboards stacked one on top of another, plus, of course, the pedal keyboard, which adds all kinds of other possibilities as well.
The pedal keyboard, you've got your expression shoes there, the swell shoes for expression in the organ. And how many stop keys are on this organ, Fred? Probably about 360, I would imagine.
300 some different stops with different sounds.
Yeah.
Well, we'd love to hear you play something. Again, Dean Roscoe is the soloist that's going to be at the Racine Theater Guild March 30th. Tell us what you want to play for us.
Well, I suppose we'll do something here. I kind of usually like to open things up, you know, something up with, you know, up tempo selection. So how about our director? It's March.
Okay.
Director?
That sounds fine. Again, we're coming to you from the basement of Fred Hermes and his home on the north side of Racine on beautiful Lake Michigan, and in its basement, which has been transformed into essentially a facsimile of an old-style movie palace, complete with all kinds of beautiful artifacts from the now-vanished Venetian movie theater in the heart of Racine. And this is Dean Roscoe, the soloist who will be featured at the Racine Theater Guild event coming up on March 30th. Take it away.
Thank you.
makes a lot of sound.
It certainly does. It's a fabulous instrument.
Now, is this what you most like to do, or are you also, what do we want to call it, a classical organist as well?
Well, I'm in the, let me see if I can stop this thing here now. There we go. Okay. Well, I'm in the process of continuing my education to be more of a, be better versed in the classics. Mm. But this has been my primary area of focus.
Sure.
I started playing in a roller rink when I was 13, which was theater organ.
Right.
Theater organ in a roller rink, and I played for some intermissions at the Avalon Theater in Milwaukee there before it closed in I think 2000, wasn't it, Fred?
Yeah, about that.
2000, yeah. And currently, I'm on the staff at the Organ Piper and also the staff organist for the Milwaukee Brewers, which is. A little different style, you know, in and of itself, but basically still theater organ.
Same kind of thing.
Really classical.
Right,
about it, so.
Right. So the Bach fugues can wait for another day.
Yeah, they can wait a little while,
yeah.
I suppose. But I just took a position right before the new year, actually, about September, November-ish, music director at a church, a new Catholic church in Antioch, Illinois, St. Raphael the Archangel. We're working on just finishing up the installation of our Kilgan pipe organ there as well, so we're excited about that.
Very good. You mentioned the Avalon Theater, which is on Kinnickinnick, or was on Kinnickinnick. I remember attending an event there some years ago in which some kind of film was screened, and of course we could hear the theater organ do its thing. Dee, if you want to just come down for a second. Have you done that kind of thing? That is, what can you tell us about the art of, and Fred, if you feel like joining in, please do, what can you tell us about the art of providing music for a silent film? How much have you done that, and what can you tell us about what makes that challenging?
Fred may be a little better able to answer this.
Sure.
I haven't personally scored a film yet. I haven't... In fact, that's something we should probably talk about,
yeah.
Fred. I'd like to actually learn how to do that. But it is an art.
So if you
it
would,
really is an art.
So if you were going to accompany a film, you would be, in a sense, playing kind of pre-existing pieces that fit the action.
Yeah, there's
yeah.
Some of that.
And you make up your own.
Come on over, Fred.
Make up your. You do a lot of improvising there. You got to be a good improviser.
Mm-hmm.
That John Murray, I mentioned, he is probably one of the finest silent film organists around. He had a repertoire that would never end. And he could play like you would not believe. And my first experience, if you want to hear that, with silent films. When my kid was, I don't know, junior high school or something like that, he subscribed to the Mad magazine. And they advertised the unmasking scene of the Phantom of the Opera in there. For $5, and it was just the unmasking scene. So I, what the heck? I figured, why not see what it's like? That was the original one with Lon Chaney, 1925. So I got that and I ran it on the screen at home. I said, oh yeah, kind of corny. So John Murray was coming up because John Murray used to come up here every single week in the '60s, all the way from down in Illinois, right around the tip of Chicago. And I got him up here. I'd pick him up at the North Shore station right after church and bring him out here, which is about 10 miles. He'd play the organ all afternoon, and for my friends and people, because they all came out too. So I said to him, I got this unmasking scene from the Phantom of the Opera. How about playing it for me? I've had a projector set up there and a screen sitting on top of the console. Oh, no, no. I don't do that anymore. I says, what do you mean? Oh, he says, I gave it up in the 20s, and that's the end of it. I'm not going to play it. Well, he was very adamant about that. It was wintertime, about like now. And I says, come on, John. No, I won't do it. Everybody else is unhappy. Okay, John, let's put it this way. It's one heck of a long walk back to the North Shore.
Yeah.
He says, okay, I'll do it.
A change of heart.
He played that thing, and my goodness, the music that he wove. When she approached the Phantom, and his back was to her, closer and closer and closer, and the music increased in a minor key, and then He pulled back and he dropped the music back. Mm. Then it went on again, a little bit closer, closer, and the music built up to more crescendo in a minor key, and pulled back again. Then it went up the next time, closer and closer, and grabbed the mask off, and he came down in full organ. I tell you, it was, I almost want to, still want to say what I almost did. But,
we can imagine what you almost
yes,
did.
Yes, yes, and from that on, I tell you, it was something. Then from that point on, he went on to do silent films all over the country again.
Wow, so you, rebit the bug for him then.
Yeah, that's the truth.
Wow.
I remember the first time I saw The Phantom here, you accompanied it actually, Fred. You did, wow. did a great job. Yeah.
Don't forget you're coming now. This I'm doing The Phantom Opera again here.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And Dennis Scott's going to play it.
Now, I don't see a screen. Where do we watch the film? Oh, I see, right up against the ceiling.
Lower it here.
Oh, for goodness sakes. And now a screen is coming down from the ceiling.
Yeah, and all the way down behind the console. I won't know how all the way down.
Sure.
It keeps on coming.
Yeah, so the screen essentially fills the top half of the stage area, coming down, if one chooses, all the way to the top of the organ console.
It comes down lower than that. It comes about 2 or 3 feet lower than that. Because
then
we put a light show on here occasionally.
Oh, okay.
And the organ console is down the pit, and we put on a light show. We have equipment here from the 1920s called a Brenograph, which produces what you might call psychedelic lights. Mm. And I can create everything from an erupting volcano to falling flowers to airplanes flying around. And I had, I don't know if I ever told you this story, but I had this one friend of mine, quotes, he was up there in the balcony with his feet hanging over the side, and he just stood there in awe when John Murie played, not me, John Murie, and for this Brenograph show. And he just stood there with his tongue hanging out after it was over. And I said, come on, come too. He says, Fred, he said, if I knew I could see stuff like this, I would have given up pot long ago.
So you can be entertained in a lot of different ways in the room.
It's incredible. The Brenograph is really remarkable.
And now that's the carbon arc. Those are carbon arcs. Hmm. You know what they are?
No.
Well, you know who made the first carbon arc lights. You know who made the first arc light, don't you? You know?
You told me one. I can't remember.
Do you remember who made the first arc light? It was Noah when he took the animals off.
Oh, okay.
The first arc light. That's good. I like that.
There's a 15 horsepower generator upstairs that generates the power for that.
So this was also an entertainment in movie theaters?
Yeah, and they used that for entertainment. But basically, they used it to set the mood for the silent film.
And then the film itself would screen then.
That's right. And they could also project pretty back, you know, like a framework, like a picture frame for the screen.
So how many silent films do you have in your collection potentially be watched here?
I must have about, 100 of them.
Wow.
Most of them comedies, all silent, and The Phantom of the Opera, and a few long ones. Mm. And I have one that I always use for groups when they come here. My wife said, why don't you do something different for a change? I said, this is the first time these people have ever seen this. It isn't like, the more you play it, the better you get at it anyway, because you know what all the cues are going to be. And it's called Railroad Stowaways. It's real funny. It lasts about 9 minutes, 8 or 9 minutes. One of the funniest films I got, because when these tour groups come, they only got an hour and a half. Mm. So you got to spend time doing everything.
Right.
And they ask a lot of questions, and you try to give them all the answers you can.
Sure.
I even demonstrate pipes for them here.
Right. There's a long table right in front of the railing where the organ is, and a variety of pipes are on here. Are all of these from this organ, or is
no,
it just
none
different?
Of, none of them are.
None of them are from the organ.
From broken sets from other various organs that were broke up for parts.
But essentially, it allows you to demonstrate all the different kinds of pipes that an organ can have.
Now, this is a brass trumpet here. Mm-hmm. There are 61 of them in this organ, running all the way from 9 feet long down to about this length.
Hmm. Yes, the party horn.
Yeah.
Party horn.
And then, of course, it has a reed in the bottom that vibrates, and that creates that the reed sound.
Hmm.
And we got other church organ pipes here, too. And I don't want to go through that all afternoon. You'd be here forever.
Well, they're a complicated thing to put together. Now, how well has this organ run over these many decades that you've had it in your home? I mean, has it been a challenge to keep it in good working order?
You're always doing that. But when I bought this organ, I re-leathered all the chests. pneumatics in the chest, sir. I had one here, I don't know where it is now. But the leather was all rotten. And of the 3,000 pipes that's in here approximately, there's a little bellows under every single pipe that has to collapse and open a valve into the pipe. Well, they used zephyr skin in those days. And zephyr skin was the lining, the tan lining of the stomach of an unborn calf. And it was tough material. But what happened is back in the 1920s, especially in the early 20s, up until about 1927, this zephyr skin, and even thereafter, these theaters and all the other buildings were burning soft coal. Hmm. Well, as soon as that hit the atmosphere, the moisture got into it, sulfuric acid. Well, that got sucked into all the organ blowers and people's lungs, too, by the way.
Oh.
And it would eat that leather out. And it didn't affect the church organ so much because they used a couple hours on Sunday and that was it.
Right.
Whereas the theater organ was used from about, some big theaters, 10:30 in the morning until almost midnight.
Right.
365 days a year. And, of course, that took its toll. So we sanded all that old stuff off and put all brown leather in here.
Mm.
And there are also another little primary valves that are about 3/4 inch square. And they're easy to get at. And I recovered a lot of those. And as they need recovering, you just take them out and recover them.
Mm. But again, it's sort of like that parallel to the pickup truck.
That's right.
A pickup truck doesn't fix itself, and you've probably over the years have had to learn everything there is to know about how these organs are put together and how they operate.
Yeah, you learn something about them over the years.
Wow.
One thing you really learn if you're a good, smart organ enthusiast, not the monkey with the voicing of the pipes.
Yeah.
That's because many theater organs have been ruined by enthusiasts reaming out the holes in pipes to make them louder, trying to do this and that with them. And that's something that should be only done by a pipe voicer or someone who's a professional in that line.
Right,
someone
so hands
up. Qualified, yeah.
Yeah.
So tell us about this event that is not here at your house, but this event which is happening at the Racine Theater Guild.
That event will be our first concert at the Racine Theater Guild in many years.
Probably about 10 years.
I'm guessing, 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we are lucky to have such a good man playing for us here.
Yeah,
Dean, he's a fine organist.
So what's going to happen that night?
Well, we're going to have him play. He's going to play some solos and some ballads and, the whole gamut of the organ.
Right.
And we also have another couple, Jack and Jill.
Jack Russell and Jill Jensen.
They don't like to be known as Jack and Jill, but you all automatically say it.
Sure.
And I had a birthday party for him down here. I don't know, about 3-4 years ago, and he just got out of the hospital and just barely made it, but he's in fine shape now.
Yeah.
Wonderful couple, wonderful people, wonderful entertainment.
Yeah.
So if you really want to enjoy yourself, you come that date. That's March 30th, isn't it?
March 30th at 7
p.m. At 7, yeah. And to the Racine Theater Guild in Racine. And that organ, by the way, also is a Wurlitzer.
Hmm.
That was donated to the Racine Theater Guild by Lowell McNeil, who used to own the West Racine Bank in Racine and also the Capitol Theater. And it was donated to the Racine Theater Guild with the understanding that the Dairyland Theater Organ Society would install it there, which we did.
Mm.
And then we also replaced what's known as a relay with an electronic relay at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's worked out quite well. It doesn't get all the use it should because it's one of those things that got something going on there all the time.
Yeah, right. But
the guild stays really busy. So.
Sure. Yeah. But we're glad that this can happen again. So, Dean, should we hear another sampling of your music making?
All right. Okay. All right.
While they're getting set, John Habermas, you were mentioning that you have an interesting photograph at home of an early visit you paid here. Tell our listeners about that.
Yeah, I have a photograph standing in front of this organ console with my son, who was about 6 months old at the time. And he's 41 now, has 4 children of his own.
So this tells us how long you've been frequenting the Fred Hermes home and been enjoying this. Just tell us a couple of your most memorable experiences here.
Oh, that's hard to say. There's been so many fun times here, different programs that have been put on at Fred's that, I don't know, I couldn't pick out a...
They've all been fun.
I think probably coming here for the Phantom of the Opera has been one of the highlights.
That would be pretty extraordinary.
You know, something that might interest you, you were talking about scoring silent films. A lot of operatic selections make wonderful silent film accompaniments.
Because it's kind of a highly charged, dramatic kind of art form, I suppose.
Yeah, well, particularly a chase scene that I can think of. There's a Puccini overture that makes a tremendous chase scene.
There you go.
Accompaniment.
That's a very good idea. So, and this is the CD you were talking about.
That's right. The 50/50 CD. You can get those from our organ club by getting them from me, Fred Hermes, at 1710 Heather Lane, Racine, Wisconsin, for $20 plus $5 to ship them. Walt Stroney is one of the finest organists there is, and he put this on for the 50 years that I've owned this organ. And at his 50th birthday. That's why we call it 50-50.
So the 50th anniversary that you owned this and his 50th birthday, a special concert that happened right here.
Yes. And I'd also like to say, before it slips my mind, that the Dairyland Theater Organ Society, which puts this on, we put concerts on at the Riverside and at the Oriental in Milwaukee and at the Avalon, but we're a nonprofit organization dedicated to preserving a theater organ, and the money we make off these concerts goes into a scholarship fund. So we give scholarships to organ scholars in the area. So it's
a very good point.
Yeah, and I didn't want to have that slip by.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point to make. Glad you mentioned that. Dean, what are you going to play for us?
A Spanish Paso Doble now. How about that?
Something Spanish now. Yeah. Okay, a Paso Doble. Very good.
And I am so grateful to have had the opportunity on this one occasion to visit the home of Fred Hermes and to experience the splendor of the Wurlitzer Theater organ in his home theater. And I want to thank again John Habernus, who was a student at Carthage at the time, who helped arrange for my visit to the home of Fred Hermes. And Fred Hermes is going to be very